Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Gwyn Sheltimer, my co-host Felicity Signal-Reed, and our guest this week, Millie Morton. Now, your book is set in Ontario, but you yourself have travelled all over the world in your career, and now this book is taking you all over Canada to talk about it. So the book Grace has been received really enthusiastically. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think people like to read about their own history. And many of us grew up on farms and went to one-room schools or taught in one-room schools. So that's part of the curiosity. Of course, now there used to be more than 5,000 one-room schools, and now many of those schools have become private homes. So anybody who lives in a school is interested, but also some schools are part of historical villages.
Right.
There's one school near Bancroft that has become a tea room.
Oh.
So people are curious about one-room schools if they haven't learned about that before. Many people don't know the history of Ontario's countryside. And I've written the stories about things that happened in the early part of the 20th century when Grace was a child going to school and then teaching in one-room schools in the 20s and 30s, and also in the 50s and 60s.
Right.
So I think those stories are interesting.
And like you'd said a little earlier when you were reading, a lot of these things, no matter what time they're set in or what place they're set in, they're universal stories for us all, even in modern day, you know, decisions about cutting hair or whatever.
Right.
So I think that part of it too is somebody's real life.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. So how have your readers reacted? Have you had any feedback?
Oh, well, I've had a lot of feedback, and that is so lovely. I have received letters from former students of Grace, and I wish she were around to be able to read them, although she did get many such letters when she was still with us. But people tell me that they remember stories from when they were in her school, not so much things, specific facts that they learned, but how they felt, how she made them feel important, how she was kind when they were sick for a couple of weeks and missed school. She would bring work to the house so that they wouldn't get behind the other children in their grade. And I think there's a lot of curiosity about how could one teacher possibly teach 8 grades in one room?
Yeah, I have that question myself.
And in fact, in the 1930s, her salary declined because everybody was without money in the Depression, and she agreed to teach one of the students in her area grades 9 and 10. This was permitted by the Department of Education. So she not only taught 8 grades, she also taught grade 9 and 10.
Wow.
And this was because there was no school busing at that time, and the only way that the parents of the young girl didn't want to send her away from home at age 13, 14 to board and go to high school in town. So they wanted her to continue to go to the one-room school, but to do grades 9 and 10, and then she'd be old enough to stay in town.
Yeah. That was one of the lovely things about one-room schools. They were part of the community. They weren't somewhere you went to and came back from as a separate life. It was right there in your community with people you knew.
Right, and they were managed by local people. Mm-hmm. 3 trustees formed the school board, and they made the decisions who to hire, who to dismiss, what the salary would be.
Right.
They were brought in if there were any difficulties, such as discipline issues.
Yeah. Something that in your book appears, and it's in a way it's out of place, but it has a special place, and that's a hibiscus plant. Because that's not an Ontario plant by any means, but it shows up in your book in several places, and I think it has a special significance. Do you want to tell us about the hibiscus?
Yes. Grace championed the little things of life, and through the book, the hibiscus shows how the little things of life can be important. She really championed flowers and kindness and generosity and those kinds of things. The hibiscus is a joy because of its blooms. They're almost a microcosm of life. First of all, you see a little tiny green bud, and it's not clear whether it's a leaf or a bud. And then it gets bigger, and you anticipate that it's going to be a flower. And it gets longer, and it turns pink. And then one day, one morning, it starts to open. It opens very slowly over a period of an hour or two. And then it throws back its petals, and you can see the beautiful throat. And you can enjoy it all the whole day. But the next day, or a maximum 2 days, it starts to wrinkle and fold up. And it also assumes a beautiful appearance even as it shrivels and falls off the plant. And Grace's hibiscus was a gift to my mom and dad on their 40th wedding anniversary. And when I came home for visits of a week or so during the next many years, they would invariably say, come in the living room and see the hibiscus, because it would have one or two or three blooms, and I would admire it. But I didn't fully understand in my heart how meaningful it was. And when my mother went to a retirement home, she said, I want to take the hibiscus plant with me. Well, it was big. It was 5 feet high and maybe 3 feet wide. And she had a big room, and she put it in the room, and it became something that we always admired and talked about and enjoyed when we went to visit her. When she went to a nursing home, we had to clear out her room, and the hibiscus became mine. I brought it to my house. I put it in an east window, and even though it had bloomed in the retirement home without any direct sunlight, mine had blooms that had already started when they were in my mother's room, and when after that it was impotent for more than a year. And I kept asking my mother, what do I do to get it to bloom? And she gave me all kinds of tips, talk to it, fertilize it. It's just worried because it's in a new place. But it didn't bloom until the very week that her life was ebbing away.
Oh.
And that was very meaningful to me, that the blooms came then. And while I was writing the book, I moved it to a west window where it got more light, and it became very happy. It was blooming and blooming and blooming. And so I'm now doing what my parents used to do with me. When my children come home, I say, come and see the hibiscus.
That's a lovely tale.
And the hibiscus actually is a flower of celebration, and in many cultures it symbolizes delicate beauty, courage, honor, and immortality.
Wow, so that's perfect for the story of Grace.
Yeah.
Could you read another section for us?
Yes, I'd be happy to read a section. I'm going to read a section from a time when she was teaching in a school system near Norwood, and this would have been in the late 1920s. Bobby was only in first grade, but he created the first discipline problem. Grace sensed what was happening from conversations among the children and then saw for herself. Bobby was kicking and hitting his classmates and being a general menace on the playground. She thought perhaps the other children's response would lead him to change, and when he didn't, she held him back from recess to have a little talk. "What do you like to do at recess?" she asked. "Do you play with the other boys?" "Yes," he squirmed and shifted his weight from one foot to the other. "Bobby, there's to be no kicking of other children on the playground. You can run around, but don't hurt others. Do you understand?" "Yes," he lowered his eyes and stared at his worn shoes. "What's the playground rule?" "No kicking, no hitting." She gave him a little pat and smiled and sent him outside. It soon became apparent that her little talk had made no difference. Another child returned from lunch crying, claiming that Bobby had knocked him down. Grace knew she had to do more. The next day, she came to school prepared to take action. At recess, she dismissed all the children as usual, then stood by the window watching them play. Very soon, she saw Bobby deliberately hit two other boys. From the door of the school, she called him, and he responded obediently, coming into the school with his hands behind his back. "Bobby, do you remember what we talked about yesterday?"
"Yes, Miss Damon."
"I saw you hit Andy and David just now." She could see his shoulders stiffen as he squeezed his hands together, hoping perhaps she couldn't separate them to administer the strap. I should say, as an aside, the strap was a piece of leather that was used to hit children's hands and when they disobeyed. "I'm not going to hit you, Bobby. I'm going to make sure those hands don't hit anyone else." Quickly, she walked behind him, pulled a rope from her pocket, and tied his hands firmly behind his back. "Now go out to play." For a few more minutes, she stood by the window to see what happened. She could hear him pleading with other children to untie him. Nobody did. At the end of recess, she got the other pupils started again on their work, then took Bobby to the back of the room to untie the rope. That's when she realized how firmly she had tied it. "It's so tight, I'm not sure I can get it off," she said softly, and Bobby burst into tears. A few minutes later, she did get the rope off. Quietly, she asked Bobby to tell her what playground rules he needed to remember. He knew the rules, and this time he remembered them.
Well, thank you, Millie. That was wonderful. And thanks for coming in today to speak with us and to read to us. Where can listeners buy your book?
It can be purchased from my website, which is Millie Morton with MILLIEMORTON. .wordpress.com. Okay. And it's also available locally at Lighthouse Books in Brighton.
Fabulous. And to connect with us, please go to our website at wordonthehills.com, and there you can leave comments or listen to our archived programs at any time and anywhere, and perhaps send us an email at wordonthehills897@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in again this week. We hope you'll join us for another program next week, right here on Northumberland 897, Truly Local Radio.